Good afternoon. Let's start from the Università di Cristo della Basilicata in Potenza. He's going to talk about fractalian objects as qualia.
Let me start by warmly thanking Professor Telekaras for the invitation to participate in the conference, first of all. The second thing I want to say is that my Wittgenstein is a very old one, as you will shortly see. I am going to argue for the identification of tractalian objects with qualia, that is, with repeatable phenomenal qualities in the sense of Goodman's, the structure of appearance. In so doing, however, I can't bypass the well-known answer Wittgenstein gave Malcolm when the latter asked him why no instance of an object can be found in the Tractatus. That is, quoting Malcolm, that it was not his business as a logician to try to decide whether this thing or that was a simple thing or a complex thing, that being a purely empirical matter. As to this purported justification of a somewhat disconcerting silence, it should be noticed that, as it often happens with the later Wittgenstein's assessments of the early Wittgenstein's work, the justification, in my opinion, is partly misleading. Speaking of a purely empirical matter could suggest that we are dealing with one of those questions which the Tractatus semantic principles qualify as meaningful questions. Questions concerning the existence or non-existence of given states of affairs, or more generally, the obtaining of one combination of the existence and non-existence of given states of affairs among those included in a proper non-empty subset of the set of all day possible combinations. Clearly, Wittgenstein here calls a question concerning the application of logic empirical, where applied logic, applied is opposed to pure logic, conceived of as an a priori inquiry into the principles of linguistic representation. To determine the kind of repeatable phenomenal entities where the semantic analysis of propositions must come to an end is, for example, a typical problem of mere application of logic, even though experience teaches us that it might be a very difficult one. In some remarks on logical form and in the manuscripts of the years 1929-32, Wittgenstein himself worked hard on the question of whether an analyzed shades of colors, or rather their components such as degrees of brightness, were to be taken as objects. Even once the true import of Wittgenstein's answer to Malcolm has been brought out, the task remains of proving that the theoretical framework of the Tractatus allows the identification of objects with qualia, that is, with abstract entities whose instances occur in the stream of phenomena. An identification, moreover, which should be justified at the level of ontological consideration, not at that of application of logic. In looking for positive evidence, my inquiry will strictly adhere to the following methodological canon: not to go beyond the sections of the Tractatus devoted to ontology. By adopting this canon, I aim at ruling out two other sources of evidence: the part of the Tractatus and of the notebooks devoted to solipsism, and the writings of the years 1929-32, even the material explicitly thought of by Wittgenstein as comments on the pertaining sections of the Tractatus. Although I am personally convinced that what comes out from these two sources finds overwhelming evidence in favor of the reading of the Tractatus that I am about to propose, I will try to strengthen my thesis by basing it exclusively on the ontological part of the Tractatus, so as to avoid the accusation of surreptitiously projecting Wittgenstein's standpoint in the late 20s and early 30s onto his first masterpiece. More specifically, I will show that Quadia, I will try to show that Quadia enjoy the main features which the Tractatus explicitly attributes to objects. That is, firstly, they are the substance of the world in the sense that they subsist independently of what is the case. TLP 2.024. You have the handout with the German and text and English translation. Okay. Secondly, they are colorless. TLP 2.0232. Thirdly, space, time, and color are forms of days. TLP 2.0251. Fourthly, two objects of one and the same logical form are distinguished only by their being different. TLP 2.0233. What follows can be attributed as a comment on these four sections of the Tractatus. Let us start from the first topic, whose treatment will be much shorter than it deserves. It would seem reasonable to explain the notion of substantiality, that is, of subsistence independently of what is the case, along the following lines. First, such subsistence is to be understood as necessary existence, that is, existence in every possible world. Further, an object O exists in a possible world M. Possible world is to be understood as a possible configuration of existence and non-existence of the states of affairs. I was saying that an object coexists in a possible world M if at least one state of affairs S, of which O is a constituent, exists in M, is a fact in M. Thus, saying that an object O subsists independently of what is the case would mean that for every possible world M, at least one state of affairs S, of which O is a constituent, exists in M. In more colorful terms, the substantiality of an object would consist in the fact that in every conceivable configuration of the world, it would belong to the chain of events which characterizes that configuration. In particular, among the facts in which the actual world splits up, there would be at least one containing the object O as a constituent for every object O. Within the Tractatus, a path leading to that interpretation of the substantiality of objects might be individuated as follows. Section 2.0251. Can read it. If you want it. A special object must be situated in infinite space. Special point is an item and place. A spectrum visual field, though it need not be red, must have some color. It is, so to speak, surrounded by color space, must have some pitch, objects of the sense of touch, some degree of hardness, and so on. This section states that being colored, together with being in space and being. Oh, sorry, I mistake. The section I want to mention is 2.0251, sorry, and is the section which runs as follows. 0251, space, time, and color, being colored, are forms of objects. I'm sorry. This section states that being colored, together with being in space and being in time, is a formal property of any object. And this would mean that it is impossible for an object not to be colored. But section 2.01.1 states that if an object has the property of being colored, then it must have one determinate color, the section I read before. Even though of no particular color, can one say that the object must necessarily have it? Since a given object's having a particular color can be seen as a state of affairs for which the object is a constituent, then necessarily at least one state of affairs for which the object is a constituent exists, is a fact, as required. Later on, we shall see that the interpretation of section 2.0251, space, time, color, being colored are forms of objects, applying above, is quite wrong, in my opinion. Whereas the correct reading, its correct reading, can be readily drawn from the conception of objects as qualia. But quite independently of that circumstance, one can easily detect the plain misunderstanding of section 2.0231, which undermines at its roots the purported proof that for every object, a state of affairs containing it as a constituent exists. When Wittgenstein says that a speck in the visual field, though it need not be red, must have some color, it is, so to speak, surrounded by color space. Notes must have some pitch, objects of the sense of touch, some degree of hardness, and so on. He's simply illustrating by means of an analogy with the relation determinable, determinate, the point that he has just made in section 2.013. Notice that section 2.0131 is indeed the comment relating to it. That is, section 2.013, I quote, each thing is, as it were, in a space of possible states of affairs. This space I can imagine empty, but I cannot imagine the thing without the space. In other terms, an object cannot be thought of apart from its possible combinations with other objects, that is, apart from the states of affairs of which it is a constituent. Although of none of these states of affairs, individually taken, the object must be imagined as a constituent. Moreover, it is conceivable that none of these states of affairs exists, is a fact. Section 2.013 plays a strategic role, maintaining, as Wittgenstein does, that an object cannot be thought of in isolation, does not mean that it must necessarily be thought of as a constituent of an existing state of affairs. The stress is on existing, of a fact. The true point is that an object can be conceived of only as a constituent of any one of its possible combinations with other objects, states of affairs, combinations which, taken as a whole, form a sort of space where the object is placed. As Wittgenstein himself overtly stresses, nothing prevents us from imagining that space as empty, in the sense that we can imagine that no one of the states of affairs belonging to it exists, obtains the actual world. What we cannot do is to think of the object without its space, since it is, in essence, an entity which can occur and can be represented only in combination with others. That an object cannot be conceived of in isolation tallies with one of the pivotal claims of the picture theory, according to which thought is intrinsically confined to possible configurations of objects, whose logical form is reproduced in its structure. Conclusive evidence for the unsoundness of the interpretation of substantiality under scrutiny can be gathered by considering that if the space where each object is placed could not be empty, a fortiori logical space, the totality of states of affairs in its entirety, could not be empty. That is, the possibility that no state of affairs existed would be inconceivable. That the emptiness of logical space is conceivable, however, inevitably follows from Wittgenstein's well-known assumption of the logical independence of elementary propositions. In virtue of that independence, among the admissible combinations of the truth values of elementary propositions, there is the one in which all of them are false. Think of the last line of that portion of the truth table where all the truth possibilities are listed, or the truth possibilities of involved elementary propositions are listed, and where only F occurs. Corresponding to this combination of truth values, there is that combination of the existence and non-existence of states of affairs in which none of them exists, that is, in which logical space is empty. In conclusion, the existence of at least one state of affairs, of which a given object O is a constituent, cannot be proved a priori, and hence, if it comes true, no logical ground can be found for it. It is nothing but a contingent matter. If the definition of substantiality of an object O as necessary existence, understood as existence in every possible world N of a state of affairs S of which O is a constituent, were adopted, then the Tractatus would force the conclusion that no object would necessarily exist, and therefore that no object would have the nature of substance. But this, plainly, is a reductio ad absurdum of that conception of substantiality of objects. What is my alternative view? I think that the notion of existence does not fit objects at all. Objects, as repeatable phenomenal qualities, are abstract entities, whereas existence in the Tractatus fits only concrete complexes, or equally, states of affairs. Echoing Meinong's argument, one could probably say that they are beyond being and not being and not being. My interpretation can be roughly sketched along the following lines. The stream of phenomena, what is perceived, the given, is constituted by existing phenomenal complexes, phenomenal facts, which can be analyzed in repeatable qualitative parts, qualia. For instance, a minimal concrete visual complex, a color spot moment in Goodman's terminology, can be divided into three constituent parts, a phenomenal time, a visual place, and a phenomenal color. On the other hand, a mere color spot, that is an entity like any temporal determination, is not a perceivable concrete entity, and neither are, for theory, its two constituents, the color and the place in the visual field. A phenomenal color, which does not occur at a certain place of the visual field and at the moment of the phenomenal time, cannot be found in experience. Notice that this condition perfectly matches the claim that an object can be given and can be represented as well only as a constituent of states of affairs. The components of the color spot moment, that is the place of the visual space, the color and the moment of time, are qualitative parts of the concrete complex, which enjoy the status of repeatable aspects of phenomenal complexes. Conversely, an existing complex, an existing state of affairs, in which the quality of red occurs as a constituent, is a concrete instance of that abstract universal, which is the quality of red. Similarly, two simultaneous color spot moments are two different instances of that one and the same temporal quale, which is a constituent of both of them. And two successive color spot moments in the same place of the visual field are two differences of that one and the same spatial quale, which again is a constituent of both of them. The two complexes can possibly, but not necessarily, be two instances of one and the same color pattern. Within this sort of atomism of qualities, the ontological distinction between qualia objects on the one hand and concrete complexes, states of affairs on the other, can be clearly outlined. Existence can be predicated only on the latter and amounts to the actual realization of the combination of their qualitative constituents. When the repeatable qualitative aspects of the totality of the phenomenal even are taken over as the ultimate constituents of the existing complexes forming that totality of the facts forming the world, they are released from any dependence on the circumstance that this or that configuration contains. They subsist independently of what is the case. Substantiality of objects explained along these lines matches their semantic role of Bedeutung and of names. The Tractarian clear-cut division between the semantic sphere and the empirical sphere, that of the existence of concrete phenomenal complexes, is guaranteed by the abstract nature of qualia and the strict restriction of existence to complexes or states of affairs rules out any further level of existence besides and beyond that of concrete complexes. Let's now verify how the conception of objects as qualia enables us to easily unravel the muddle of the interpretation of the other three sections cited at the beginning of this talk, a topic of which commentators have busied themselves for a long time. From section 2.0232, I quote, English translation, in a manner of speaking, objects are colorless. No doubt, a repeatable phenomenal quality is colorless and by extension has no location in visual space nor in time. A quale, just because of its nature of abstract entity, has neither color nor position in phenomenal space and time. Only concrete complexes that have a phenomenal quality of color among their constituents are colored. And this is the point of Wittgenstein's statement in 2.0231, that material properties are represented only by propositions, are produced only by the composition of objects. To put it in a nutshell, objects do not have any color, although some of them are colors. Do not occupy any visual place, although some of them are visual places. Do not have any position in phenomenal time, although some of them are phenomenal times, that is, in Russell's terminology, moments of private time. On the other hand, those complexes which have a spatial quality among their constituents do have a spatial location. And likewise, all those complexes which have a temporal quality among their constituents, all concrete complexes, as we shortly see, do have a position in time. Let's come now to section 2.0251, which reads, space-time color being colored are forms of objects. This is the standard English translation, again as it appears, of a section that in German sounds Raumzeit und Farbe, Färbigkeit, sind Formen der Gegenstände. Now, I am a bit puzzled by the translation of Färbigkeit with being colored, and would suggest an alternative one, that is, that Färbigkeit here means color intensity or hue. My poor English does not enable me to settle the question, of course, but I have the Italian words in my mind, of course. That is the point, is that in both the cases, that is color intensity or hue, in both cases, a component of colors, just as brightness, and you will forgive me for a moment, I violate the rule, I set up the outset and remind you that degrees of brightness are tentatively chosen as atoms in some remarks of logical form. It might have been an erroneous interpretation of the notion of form of an object that led the English translators to their choice. And it would be a confirmation of the interpretation I am putting forward that it perfectly squares with the translation of Ferbischkeit into English as color intensity or hue. The oscillation between color intensity and color in the role of form of objects would prove that since the time of the Tractatus, Wittgenstein was aware of the different alternatives opened to the choice of the ultimate qualitative atoms. One may wonder if Wittgenstein uses the word Ferbischkeit as well in his writings, of course. The answer is yes, he does. And one of the relevant passages included in Remarks on Colors runs as follows. I read the German text. Ein Medium, wodurch ein schwarz und weißes Muster Schachbrett unverändert erscheint, wird man nicht ein weißes nennen, aber wenn dadurch anderen Farben an Färbigkeit verlieren. That is, in the English translation, the Ernst translation, it runs as follows. We wouldn't want to call a medium white if a black and white pattern appeared unchanged when seen through it. Even if this medium reduced the intensity of the other colors. Intensity is the translation of Ferbischkeit. I want to call your attention to a further circumstance. The section at issue, that is section 2.0251 of the LP, condenses the content of two distinct sections of the so-called Proto-Tractatus. The first of which reads Raum und Zeit sind Formen der Gegenstände, this is a term, forms of objects, whereas the second one significantly runs as follows. Ebenso ist die Farbe oder Färbigkeit eine Form der visuellen Gegenstände. I say significantly because of the occurrence of the adjective visuellen, which proves the phenomenal nature of the kind of objects which have color as their own form. As we are about to see, places of the visual field and phenomenal colors taken together form the category of visual objects. Well, in order to get a satisfactory explanation of the section at issue, it is expedient to start from the notion of form of an object. The common form of all objects, as is well known, is to be understood as their capability of combining with the other objects in those broader structures, which are states of affairs or complexes, here in 2.0141. Wittgenstein, however, also speaks of the form of a given object in such a way that it can be legitimately described as the set of all possible combinations with other objects into which the given object can enter. With reference to the latter notion of form, there are some objects objects which have the same logical form, whereas others differ in form. For example, the color of red can combine with every place in the visual field and with every moment in phenomenal time, and the color of red of green can occur exactly in the same combinations. Thus, phenomenal red and green do have the same form. On the contrary, the pitch of the phenomenal sound, which is a quadrilateral aspect of auditory plexus, can combine with no place of the visual field, with no spatial pattern, and therefore has a form which is different from that which is common to red and green. Enough evidence is now available in order for the statement that color, space and time are forms of objects to be justified. We saw that having a color is a property that can be predicated of some phenomenal complexes, in particular of those complexes which have a color palette among their constituents. Thus, one can reasonably conclude that color is the form of those objects which, by combining with other objects, yield colored complexes. And this amounts to saying that it is the form common to the repeatable phenomenal qualities of red, green, yellow, and so on, common to all color qualia. The thesis that color is a form of objects can be restated by simply saying that color is a formal concept which must be represented by means of a variable whose values are the qualia of red, green, yellow, and so forth. In other words, it is a category of objects which collects objects all enjoying the same combinatorial possibilities. Similarly, space is the form of those objects which, by combining with other objects, yield the phenomenal spatial complexes. That is the formal concept under which every place of the visual field falls. Here, again, overlooking the interesting question as the true nature, either absolute or relative, of the location in visual space, a problem which is certainly not by chance Wittgenstein had to be coping with his writings of the early 30s. Lastly, time is the form of those objects which, by combining with other objects, yield phenomenal temporal complexes. That is the formal concept under which every moment of phenomenal time falls. I am again overlooking the interesting question as the true nature, either absolute or relative, of the positions in phenomenal time. Although the favorable textual evidence is meager, we could add that even some pitch, tone, hardness, phenomenal warmth should be numbered among the forms of objects, and hence among the formal concepts into which qualia split up. Furthermore, formal categories less general than that of object. But more general than those of span, color, pitch, tone, hardness, warmth, could be used to classify objects under the various sense realms. In this vein, the category of visual objects would include both spatial and color qualia. The category of auditory objects would include the qualia of pitch, tone, and so on. The category of tactual objects, the qualia of hardness, warmth, and so forth. Notice that, if my interpretation is adopted, Wittgenstein's omitting the adjective visuelle in passing from proto-tractatus to the tractatus can be accounted for by recalling that time is a form of the objects of every sense realm, not only of the visual. That my interpretative perspective is adopted, Section 2.0233, the last one, what we deal with, can be disposed of rather easily. It reads, if two objects had the same logical form, the only distinction between them, apart from their external properties, is that they are different. Take the qualian, say red and green, which, as required, have the same logical form, that is, color. Plainly, one of them might occur as a constituent of a complex existing at the time t, while the other does not. In that case, the one would enjoy an external contingent property, which the other not. The two qualia, however, cannot be distinguished by resorting to their formal properties alone. And nonetheless, their inexpressible difference in content remains, insofar as they are different, repeatable aspects of phenomena. Thus, formal indiscernibility does not entail identity, and not even complete indiscernibility does. Indeed, two qualia of the same form might not have material properties which distinguish one from the other. And, though formally and materially indiscernible, they would continue to be two. The rejection on Wittgenstein's part of the use Russell had made in Principia Mathematica of Leibniz's principle of the identity of discernibles to define identity is clearly expressed in section 5.5302 of the Tractatus, and this is, in my opinion, a valuable support to my interpretation. Before drawing some conclusions, I want to dwell briefly upon time, one of the forms of objects explicitly mentioned by Wittgenstein. On the basis of the preceding reconstruction of the Tractarian ontology, as far as objects are concerned, I skip any reference to states of affairs, we can finally reach a clear understanding of the relation between time and objects. Substantiality of objects has often been identified with their eternity, that is, with their endless duration in time, and with their indestructibility. In the light of the interpretation outlined above, this shows up as a gross error. It is concrete complexes that are placed in time, owing to the occurrence of one or more temporal qualia among their constituents. In the simplest case, a color spot moment is a concrete complex having one temporal qualia as a constituent. An object, being devoid of parts, has no temporal qualia as a constituent. By its very nature of simple entity, it is out of the stream of time. The true status of an object can be correctly described by saying that it is atemporal, not eternal, if an eternal entity is understood as an everlasting one, that is, as an instance of every moment of time. Much more difficult, in my opinion at least, is the question of whether the Tractarian ontology countenances eternity of complexes. I cannot go through this topic here, and I limit myself to observe that it is intertwined with the question of whether the Tractarian solipsism is of the sort known as solipsism of the present time, a unique temporal quality would be a constituent of all perceived complexes. As to the relation between time and concrete complexes, notice that temporal qualia have a feature which distinguishes them from all other qualia, as Goodman has clearly shown. Whereas qualia of no other form are required to occur in every concrete complex, for instance, no color is a constituent either of an auditory or of a tactual complex, every concrete complex or whatever sense realm has at least a temporal qualia among its constituents. Temporal qualia belong to all sense realms. In the Tractarian framework, this condition implies that existence, which is confined to the province of concrete complexes, necessarily enjoys a temporal dimension. What exists? Exists in time. I want to conclude my talk by showing that, by trying to show that, contrary to what has usually been claimed, references to material points in those parts of the notebooks devoted to the discussion of symbols are not to be understood as though such points were, in Wittgenstein's reflections, true candidates to the role of objects. I mean that Wittgenstein never considered entities of physics as a genuine alternative to phenomenal entities for that role. It is expedient to focus attention on an apparently minor point which can offer the key to the understanding of Wittgenstein's intention. In the well-known relevant passages of the notebooks, Wittgenstein speaks of the method usually employed in physics, consisting in theoretically decomposing bodies in material points. I am convinced that the fact that he does not speak of atoms but of material points is of the utmost importance. There is a notable difference between the two notions, a difference that, if taken into account, can enable us to understand the true import of Wittgenstein's matching the logical and physical analysis. Material points, understood as extensionless points, endowed with mass, different from atoms and electrons and so forth, are ideal objects of mechanics. They have the same status of frictionless surfaces, which are spoken of and as completely isolated energetic systems, which are spoken of in thermodynamics. As Quine explains in some interesting pages of World and Object, in no way concerned with the Tractatus, the ideal status of mass points is revealed by the fact that they do not occur in nature and to a certain extent violate some of the laws of physics. Whereas statements of physics about atoms, electrons, and so forth put forward claims to provisional truth about the properties of those theoretical entities, statements of mechanics about material points and their systems should be interpreted alibiestras, that is, within a sort of generalized theory of limits, mythical limits in Quine's jargon. This means that the law regarding the behavior of material points should be understood as a behavior which is more and more approximated by that of concrete material particles insofar as their masses decrease, in the sense that the more their masses approach zero, the more their behavior complies with the laws of mechanics and material points. Let's come back to the Tractatus with the historic Quinean notions and distinctions. My interpretive conjecture, and I put forward here for discussion, of course, is that Wittgenstein's matching objects with material points of mechanics does not aim at presenting the latter as legitimate candidates, among others, to the role of logical symbols, but suggests a comparison by analogy of theoretical function in mechanics and in logic, respectively. More precisely, maintaining that the meaning of a name is an object, an absolutely simple entity, is tantamount assuming that the more the meanings of linguistic expressions approach the absence of parts, the more their behavior complies with the principles which, according to the ontology of the Tractatus, holds for objects. As we have seen, the best approximation is afforded by qualia. At first sight, however, qualia violate the principle of the logical independence of states of affairs. The existence of the phenomenal complex red spot in the place L at the time T this violation probably prompted Wittgenstein not to abandon this field purely a priori considerations of logic, as distinct from that of its application, in the dogmatic certainty that sooner or later the analysis of propositions of natural language would have confirmed general principles framed in the ontological sections of the Tractatus. As the 2932 manuscripts and the articles and remarks of logical form witness, that certainty was destined to clash with the reality which was very different from that anticipated by Wittgenstein's earlier expectations. In support of the reconstruction put forward above, it should be noticed that both in the manuscripts and the paper, something else in logical form, the problem of the logical independence of states of affairs is stated in terms of phenomenal colors, with the overt intention of pushing the logical analysis of the given to a further level, where such deeper qualia as degrees of brightness of colors make their appearance. Thanks.
Particles moving with two distinct velocities. guy looks from that as if he was thinking that there was an alternative and physicalist description of the world, which was, you know, equally valid with the phenomenalistic one that you mentioned. And of course that is what in fact occurs also in Kölner, the Lautschaft der Welt, he says, and then he just chooses the phenomenalistic one because he thinks it's more convenient. When later Carnap became a physicalist, and he published stuff on physicalism, Wittgenstein was indignant, saying, "You got this from me," meaning that physicalism was already in the Tractatus.
Answer briefly. As for the first question, I think that it has some that the choice between the translation of Fertigkeit with being colored and with the hue or coloring to what you prefer has very important consequences of the interpretation of the notion of object. This is the point I try to make. Because if you choose big color, I think that you suggest that it's a property of objects, that of big color. Whereas if you choose the alternative translation, you adopt a view which is similar to that I have put forward here. And so I don't think that the two are on the same level. As for the second question, yes, I know the passages you mentioned, but in the passage of the Tractatus where he suggests to take in consideration the way in which in physics the same problem appears. But I guess that it is the suggestion, the Wittgenstein suggestion aims at presenting in an analogous case, not in analysis of what happens at the phenomenal level in terms of what happens at the physical level. This is my tentative answer.
More questions?
So if I understood you well, the proposal is to identify Tractarian objects with qualia in the sense that they are abstract entities, but according to what I understood, they are also universal. And so they are abstract universals, and then a state of affair is a particular exemplification of a particular.
An existing state of affair is a yeah. Instantiation of an existing. Of
okay, so my question is.
Is an instantiation, an existing state of affairs, is an instantiation of every quale which is a constituent of it.
So my question is whether you would defend a bundle theory for these particulars that allegedly they instantiate such universals, or do you defend some kind of bare particular theories? How do you manage this problem of identifying the particular which is supposed that is instantiating universals?
Sorry, can you explain the difference between these two?
I suppose that concrete state of affairs is a particular instantiation of these universals. So to instantiate is a relation, so we need to relate the universal and the particular. I was wondering what kind of theory you defend for these particulars, or whether you were ready to accept a different approach, a different reading to the proposal along the lines of taking these objects not as abstract universals, but as abstract particulars, namely tropes.
The line I accept is that is Goodman's line in The Structure of Appearance. I don't know if you know the position where Goodman explains, I think in very, very convincing terms, the kind of relation between qualia, that are abstract universals, and complexes, which are vague, concrete instantiation. That is, I think that the most important relation in this context is that of belonging, because equale belongs to a concrete, which is an instantiation of it. And this is the only relation which connects the two kind of entities. This is it.
More questions? What you meant was that being a net would be an object of an elementary proposition. In an elementary proposition, would that be possible? Being red, or being green, this would be an object.
No, I can, in an example of elementary proposition, one adopts this point of view. I think that an example would be of an elementary proposition in this framework, in the framework of this interpretation, would be something like, red here now, for example. This is a description of a color spot moment in my visual field. And if it exists, my proposition is true, otherwise.
But this couldn't be, in fact, an elementary proposition, because here red now contradicts here green now.
No,
and two elementary propositions cannot be contradicted.
I know the only problem, but this is the problem which witness I had.
And you, or not?
No, I do not endorse Wittgenstein's ontology, Tractatus ontology. I simply try to give a reconstruction which, in my opinion, maximize the consistency. It is, my aim is that of consistently accounting for the greatest number of sections of the Tractatus.
But this is
the game.
But don't you think that if your interpretation, brings out a problem with which Wittgenstein cannot cope, this would then be an interpretation accepted by Wittgenstein?
But I think that Wittgenstein was aware of the problem, but he preferred not to try to solve it in the Tractatus, but the problem, of course, is there for him. For him.
One question.
I think what you said on the sections that we've discussed makes very good sense of the kinds of things that these complexes in. Objects might be, but it is remarkable that at least in the sections you've mentioned, there's nothing about phenomenal properties. As you say, visual is taken out. So, as far as your reconstruction of the ontology or the structure goes, based on these sections, there wouldn't be anything that suggests anything to do with experience or anything like that. That is, there could be red here now, which is not a statement about anybody's experience, but just a statement about the instantiation of those features together. So Could you say something about what there is that...
I think that all... at the beginning of my talk, I said that I want to skip any reference to the theme of solipsism, for example, that in my opinion is decisive for this theme. But there is another argument that I think is strong, that I don't know what other alternative conception of objects can account for those sections, and first that time, space, and color are forms of objects, and second, I think maybe more important, his rejection of the principle, Leibniz principle of the identity of the distance. I don't know if I don't see any other alternative view which is able to account for those aspects of that.
Yeah, I see. Could I just add on this question of 2.0251 about the Fabric factor?
Yeah.
Taking that as something like coloredness, and then one could say, as it were, reading it somewhat as if being spatial, being temporal, and being colored are forms of objects, that would get away from the problem of speaking of it as Fabric had its hue or intensity, which is a special way of being colored, but just being colored at all, so to speak, just as being spatial at all or being temporal at all is required.
Yes,
that's really
the point, but how could you explain the nature of objects as substance of the world if you think that being in space, being in time, and being color are essential properties of objects? What is an object then with this property? If it is a spatial-temporal entity, I suppose. And how can you account for that substantiality, for the fact that Leibniz principle does not hold for them, if you adopt this interpretation in terms of being in space, being in time, and being color as essential properties of objects? I don't see how it can work.
Well, I would hear. Quote you, it's not my task to make Wittgenstein's views work.
I didn't understand that last point, because I mean, I think when he says they're forms of objects, these are a general range, and each instantiation inside that range is an object. So a specific, I think that's what you're indicating. A specific color, you're quite right, you would have all the dimensions of color in a specific spot in space, a specific time, those would be three objects.
A specific point in physical space.
A specific point, well, take this one. They're forms of objects, that's to say, not that they're something objects have, but they are forms that objects take in the sense that they're the possibilities for objects. So
what do you mean if you say that an object can become colored? I don't know.
No, being a specific color is an object.
A specific color
is an object. Being a specific point in space.
This is precisely
what you think.
Yes, I agree with you. It is being red, or I don't use being red because it's a simple. I want to skip some problems with being red. I call it red or green or yellow. These are colors, and these are collected under the category, the formal category of the formal concept of being a color. Yes.
More questions?
This is quick. unsensed, unperceived qualia? Unperceived or unsensed, a qualia that nobody's experiencing.
Unperceived.
Yes.
Sorry.
Are you? Or whichever.
Yes, if I shut my eyes, I don't perceive some other qualities.
I don't know the answer.
But
I think that if, for example, if I shut my eyes, I have no instantiation of colors in my visual field. So I don't perceive any existing complex which has among its constituents a color quality.
So the turn out that a red here now would be true, right? Even though nobody is recognizing or perceiving that there's red here now.
So I don't hear.
It could be true.
Yeah.
That red here now.
Yes.
Protocol sentence could be true, even though there's not anyone to whom anything is appearing red here now.
No, this is it. This problem is connected with that of solipsism, because of the datum. There is no if that sentence right now here when I shut my eyes. Of course, it's false because my visual field is my world. I don't know if I answered your question, but.
Well, I was going to ask the next question, but it's now become moot. The instantiations exist. There's this very particular red here now at this very time. That I take it as couldn't exist. Namely, we've got red here now, just universal, it's instantiated. I was going to ask whether the instantiation could be true, the specific, certain red, crimson, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in this room.
You can do analysis.
That particular, very specific thing be true, even though nobody is sensing it? Your answer is no.
No, yes, it can be not perceived. Of course, not all the shades of a certain color are perceived at every moment of the phenomenal time, of course. But I don't see what is the problem that this acknowledgement.
I don't think we're getting through. We'll talk about it later.
I want to try, I think it's the same point that Barry started it. A way to ask would be can you defend the claim that objects have to, in particular qualia, contents of experience or something like that, from these passages alone? You've mentioned the solipsism section, which isn't on the handout, but the point about there needing to be universals in order to combining what you find on this section doesn't say anything about what kind of universals they need to be. And all we need for that is the abstract apparatus of
they are abstract universals.
Instantiation, right. So universals and then existing states of affairs are joint instantiations of complexes of universal.
It's the same complexes and states of affairs as
right, but that, I mean, that does it. That gets the essentials of your reading of these things, that existing states of affairs are joint instantiations of complexes of universals, and the objects are the universals. Nothing in that fixes it, that the universals have to be good mania qualia, as opposed to universals whose instantiations would be physical. So when challenged, you say, but what about the solipsism sections? But a way of asking the question is it only that that fixes them, that they have to be qualia, as opposed to more abstractly universals?
I think that solipsism is another source of evidence for a phenomenalistic interpretation of the Tractatus, in my opinion. And the idea of interpreting forms of objects as formal concepts into which qualia, which objects split in different categories. I think that this affords some amount of evidence for a phenomenalistic interpretation of the ontology of the Tractatus. But I am aware that I am perfectly aware that it is it deserves a further treatment and refinement, of course. But my aim was that of stressing the possibility of interpreting those sections in the light of the assumption of the nature of objects as qualia. So I'm perfectly aware that there are other steps in this direction, especially with reference to the knowledge of the first, because this is a point which I am almost completely overlooked.
More question? According to your interpretation, the logical form of a color is that it is a color.
It is a?
It is a color, somehow.
The logical form of red?
Yeah, is that it is a color.
It is a color, yes.
So, according to Tractarian theory of representation, what is represented must share the logical form with what represents. If you put these two things together, it seems to me that what follows is that only qualia can represent qualia. Only colors can represent color. That means that the thought, which is the ultimate representing entity, is made up by the very same objects that what the thought is representing. Is it true according to your interpretation? What would be to share the logical form?
I must admit that I have not yet thought about this thing, that is, how this interpretation of ontology can be combined with the picture theory. But